And that was the Happy Station song with lyrics by Mayo Higgins and sung by Tom Meyer.
You're listening to a special edition of Happy Station broadcasting to North America and the Caribbean on 9,955 kilohertz. Now, for many years, Radio Netherlands and also Happy Station, they produced a program in Spanish called La Estación de la Alegría, which Eddie Starts did, then Tom Meyer, and after Tom left, the show was taken over by Jaime Baniga of the Spanish department at Radio Nederland. So I think now we should spend a few minutes and talk about some of our listeners in Latin America, and we have one on the line right now. Ahora no tiene con el teléfono señor Jorge Isaac García Rangel. Jorge, ¿cuántos años tú escuchando los programas de Radio Nederland?
Mira, que yo escucho La Estación de la Alegría desde que tenía 16 años. Uh-huh. Desde más o menos en la época del año 1985, cuando escuchábamos el programa con Tom Meyer en español, ¿no?
Sí, con la emisora La Estación de la Alegría, ¿sí?
Sí, como La Estación de la Alegría. Y recuerdo muy bien un programa que él hizo en vivo, subido en un globo. Uh-huh. Y lo curioso de ese programa es que esa emisión no estaba dirigida hacia América Latina, sino hacia España, pero pudimos captarla a través de la onda corta relativamente bien. Y era una emisión en vivo y en directo desde Hilversum, o cerca de Hilversum.
¿Por qué mucha gente de la América Latina se escucha Radio Nederland?
Radio Nederland ha sido una emisora que ha complacido durante muchos años a sus oyentes. Y lo básicamente importante de Radio Nederland es que siempre ha estado pendiente de la audiencia latinoamericana. Y de hecho, a partir del 29 de este mes, de julio, que cesan las transmisiones en inglés y también en indonesio, ya que las transmisiones en holandés ya cesaron, va a quedar solamente las transmisiones en español vía onda corta por algunas horas. Y eso es básicamente un trabajo y un esfuerzo de muchos oyentes que hemos ido a las embajadas latinoamericanas para pedir al gobierno holandés y que no cierren las transmisiones en español. Uh-huh. Y afortunadamente, las transmisiones por onda corta continúan en español.
Radio Nederland, como tú sabes, en otro país, y tiene los programas que transmitiendo con AM y también FM. América Latina, por ejemplo, en Venezuela, ¿tú puedes escuchar Radio Nederland con las emisoras local?
Por lo que te puedo entender, sí, efectivamente, Radio Nederland es retransmitida. Uh-huh. Por algunas emisoras en AM, en especial Radio Fe y Alegría, que tiene varias estaciones repartidas en todo el territorio venezolano, que logra retransmitir algunos programas de Radio Nederland.
Si tú tienes un mensaje por los locutores como Alfonso Monteregre o también Jaime Baniga, ¿cuál es el mensaje desde el Departamento Español de Radio Nederland?
Ah, ok. Un mensaje para el Departamento Latinoamericano en Español. Uh-huh. Bueno, mi mensaje es, bueno, a partir de este momento, Radio Nederland cierra un ciclo que por muchos años, por 65 años, ha marcado un estilo en la radiodifusión internacional, ¿verdad? Y en ese sentido, viene otra etapa, una etapa más, digamos, consolidada en el sentido de que la radio internacional, a pesar de los problemas que tiene la onda corta, Radio Nederland, pues, va hacia el futuro con las nuevas tecnologías. Y yo quisiera, pues, que se mantuviese la onda corta, las transmisiones en español por un largo tiempo, y ese es el mensaje que doy a todo el departamento latinoamericano, y en especial a toda la audiencia en español de Radio Nederland.
Jorge, muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Kate, y hope everyone, your audience in English for the Happy Station.
confieso que a veces soy cuerdo y a veces loco. Y amo así la vida y tomo de todo un poco. Me gustan las mujeres, me gusta el vino. Y si tengo que olvidarlas, me voy olvido. Mujeres en mi vida hubo que me quisieron, mas he de confesar que otras también me hirieron. Pero de cada momento que yo he vivido, saqué sin perjudicar el mejor partido. Y es que yo amo la vida y amo el amor. Soy un truán, soy un señor, algo bohemio y soñador. Y es que yo amo la vida y amo el amor. Soy un truán, soy un señor y casi fiel en el amor. Confieso que a veces soy cuerdo y a veces loco. Y amo así la vida y tomo de todo un poco. Me gustan las mujeres, me gusta el vino. Y si tengo que olvidarlas, bebo y olvido. Me gustan las mujeres, me gusta el vino. Y si tengo que olvidarlas, bebo y olvido. Y es que yo amo la vida y amo el amor. Soy un truán, soy un señor, algo bohemio y soñador. Y es que yo amo la vida y amo el amor. Soy un truán, soy un señor y casi fiel en el amor. Y es que yo amo la vida y amo el amor. Soy un truán, soy un señor, algo bohemio y soñador. Y es que yo amo la vida y amo el amor. Soy un truán, soy un señor y casi fiel en el amor.
Tom Meyer with the Sky Masters Orchestra. For all our listeners in Latin America, soy un truán, soy un señor. Para todos nuestros amigos que vivir en América Latina. All right, Paulette, you know, when we were preparing the show, I was sending you some of the clips that we're going to be using, and one of them was on a legendary broadcaster, not just with Radio Netherlands, but also with the BBC World Service, and also he was part of the original DJ lineup on Radio 1 when Radio 1 on the BBC signed on in 1967, and that was Pete Myers. Now, you're not so familiar with the work that Pete did, but with the material and the clips that I sent you, what was your impression?
Well, I guess my first impression, Keith, is he's quite a character. Very interesting. He had, again, a sense of showmanship and just a great storyteller.
That's what he was known as a great storyteller at Radio Netherlands through the many documentaries that he did. You know, a lot of people said that, you know, he passed away way too soon.
Yes. Yeah. You know, what a shame it is that, you know, I'm new to shortwave and new to international broadcasting, and what a shame that so many of these great legends are gone.
Well, many people may remember that Pete also hosted Happy Station for, I think it was 12 months or 13 months. But in the early 1990s, when I was in the Netherlands, I had a chance to meet Pete Myers, spend an entire afternoon with him, including around 90 minutes in a studio.
Oh, that must have been fun.
It was something that I will certainly not forget, because I'd asked him the day before. I said, look, I want to do an interview with you, and then could I, you know, take some of your time so we could record a couple of station IDs for a radio station that I was working at in Montreal at the time. And I'll always remember it because we only had to do three 30-second spots, but it took nearly 90 minutes.
90 minutes to do 3 30-second spots?
Yes.
What took so long?
what took so long is first the...
who talked whose ear off in between those spots?
Well, the problem was both of us were cracking up the entire time.
Why?
Because Pete would say something and I would try to keep a straight face and come in right after. But I couldn't do it because he kept mangling the station's name and the call sign. And I would just try to continue. But I would just end up at laughter.
I can relate to that. You do that to me now.
he was a very, very unique guy. Very, very talented and incredibly funny. So let's now have our little tribute to Pete Myers.
Now, she was a woman of German origin whose family settled in India in the 19th century, in Madras. Music was second nature to her. She married an Englishman whose family also settled in South India at about the same time. And happily, music ran in his bloodline too. Grandpa used to play the banjo, and Granny, the piano. And this love for the piano was imparted to all her four children, and so always the house was filled with music. My mother, who had a preference for jazz and pop music, also managed to master the piano and the piano accordion. So, you see, I grew up with George Formby on the veranda, Mozart in the parlor, and Glenn Miller accordion serenading out of the bedrooms. Glorious India, which surrounded us and was then rushing on its way to independence, never musically seemed to penetrate that house. I must say, India and my roots was a voyage of discovery that was to occur decades later. So, you see, it was inevitable that I would be put to music. Subversion was at work in the shape of my mother, a wild, beautiful creature who, because of her stunning good looks and free spirit, was constantly surrounded by admirers. Because, you see, when mother hit the keyboard, it was party time. And she had this ability to listen to pianists like Charlie Coons or Earl Hines and then play just like the original. So when I'd finished butchering my Moonlight Sonata, we'd sit at the piano together, and she'd introduce me to what she called real music. When I was 6 years old, I had my very first brief encounter on a train in India. With my mother and my Aya, that's a nursemaid, we were making the long journey from Delhi to Madras. We were traveling first class, up in the front of the train. And traveling in third class at the back of that train was the father of India, Mahatma Gandhi. He always traveled third class. Whenever the train pulled into a station, a huge crowd of people would be waiting to catch a glimpse of the great soul. Well, at one of these stops, my mother drags me out of my comfortable compartment. We push our way through the crowd until finally we come within viewing distance of Gandhi. At six, I had no idea who this man was, except that he was very old, didn't seem to have a tooth in his head, and was smothered in a sea of well-wishers who all seemed to be attempting to get into his carriage. In the pandemonium, hysteria, sweat and confusion, our eyes met for one brief moment, and that was that. My mother now kept that memory alive by constantly reminding me that I had seen the Mahatma. As I grew older and understood the man's achievements, his place in history, I wondered if I had learned some moral lesson from that brief visual encounter with a saint. And the answer today is yes. And it's this. If ever you travel by train in India and can afford it, forget Gandhi. Always go first class.
Coming to you from London on the BBC's World Service, it's PM. Africa, the World, this Sunday with Pete Myers.
Sixteen years ago, when I was a puberty pimple student at college in Rochester, Kent, and very active on the Students' Entertainment Committee, one of my chores was to organize the students' annual outing to a West End theater, an event somewhat colored by my predecessor, who had a marked preference for Shakespeare. For years, the students would be bused to London for the day and bored out of their angry young minds by the eternal bard and infernal actors. The only thing they looked forward to was the titanic booze-up we used to have on the bus on the way back after the show. Now, the year I inherited the job, 1956, I decided to break with tradition and offer my fellow students something even Shakespeare would have appreciated: sex. It had arrived in the West End that summer in the delicious shape of an exciting 18-year-old from Cardiff. They billed her as the Tigress of Cardiff Bay, and with a voice that shattered the rafters and a song that outraged the nation, she was the West End's biggest attraction in a variety review called Talk of the Town. Well, I took my fellow students to that show, and to this day they remain in my debt. For we caught the very first public performances of a British singer who has matured into one of the most flamboyant international entertainers of our time. And my guest on PM today, Miss Shirley Bassey.
Who's got a match or strike him? Don't say it all depends. Who wants to help me burn my candle at both ends?
Can I ask a very candid comment? I mean, is there a bit of a tart in you as well? You know, there's a bit of bitchiness in you.
There must be, because all the parts I get sent to me, they're all about tarts, you know. Whores, you know. There must be a bit tartiness. I mean, when I do Big Spender, I really feel like a tart. And I probably look like one. And I love it.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender. Good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every man I see. Hey, big spender.
Today on Asia Scan, a world exclusive, because since the beginning of this week, rumours have been reaching us here to the effect that a Yeti has not only been sighted in Nepal, but actually captured by a team of Indian mountaineers. The first time that the abominable snowman, as the Yeti is known, has been taken into captivity. Well, early this morning, I managed to track down the leader of the Indian team, Professor Ram Gopal, to their base camp at the foot of the K2 mountain. And there I spoke to him by phone about this exciting discovery. Professor Ram, how did you capture the Yeti?
Actually, we start the expedition, you see, about 1 month ago to go look for the Yeti. We go up in the Himalayas and we are making camp just on K2, just about 4 kilometers from K2 mountain. You know this one?
Yes.
Well, then we are camping there one night, and one of our Sherpa man, he come running down the hill, he say, Yeti coming, Yeti coming. And then we standing there, we see this big Yeti chasing him. So when my friend, I say, quick, come, and we get one big net, and we put it by the tent, and the Yeti is walking into the net. Very simple.
Is the Yeti wild?
My God, yes, he is very wild. He is livid. He is shaking everything in the cage over there. I don't know what we are going to do, how we are going to get him to Delhi.
Well,
he looks very angry.
Well, congratulations, Professor Ram, and thank you for talking to us. I'll leave you now to go off and feed the Yeti. What do you feed him on?
What? I don't know. Yesterday we gave him 2 Sherpas, but maybe today we'll have to cut back.
You're running out of Sherpas?
We're running out of Sherpas, I'm telling you.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? Ah, ah. My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one. They'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk monkey shines. Now you could study Shakespeare and be quite elite, and you could charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world's at your feet.
Well, this is it, the very first show of the new season. I'm Pete Myers, and from this point on, I have the pleasure of being your Sunday host. And I must admit, you know, taking over a show that's only had 2 hosts in 64 years is a daunting experience. I mean, for 4 decades, the Happy Station was dominated by Eddie Starts.
a man I never knew, but who made this program his whole life. He rattled his teacup, and he was kind, and he was charming and considerate, and had this image of being everybody's favorite uncle. And then in 1970, along came my old buddy Tom Meyer, and he imprinted his personality on the show for 2 decades. He could speak, 1,000 languages. He could sing. He loved animals, is kind-hearted, considerate, wonderful with grandmothers, and was all sweetness and light. Now, he was the nearest thing to Mary Poppins Radio Netherlands ever had, or will ever get. So, what do you get? Since 1928, you got 40 odd years with Happy and Pappy and your favorite uncle, and 20 odd years of Mary Poppins, and suddenly you tune in today, and you're confronted with a middle-aged neurotic with a big mouth, a gammy leg, and a sex life put on hold. Well, darlings, at long last, welcome to the real world, and spread the word. The Wicked Witch of the Lowlands has arrived. And yes, dears, I do have a credo, too. It's short, it's sweet, it's funky.
Some fun. You only live but once, and when you're dead, you're done. So let the good time roll.
As a fun person, someone at least who gave pleasure in 40 years, rather than, you know, someone who's tried to be profound.
I don't care if you're young or old, you ought to get together and let the good time roll. Don't sit there mumbling, talking trash. If you want to have a ball, you got to go out and spend some cash. And let the good time roll now. I'm talking about the good times. Well, it makes no difference whether you're young or old. All you got to do is get together and let the good time roll. In town, I got a dollar and a quarter, and I'm just ran the clown. But don't let no female play me cheap. I got 50 cents more than I'm gonna keep. So let the good time roll now. I tell y'all, I'm gonna let the good time roll. Well, it don't make no difference if you're young or old. All you got to do is get together and let the good time roll. Yeah, no matter whether, rainy weather, if you want to have a ball, you got to get yourself together. Oh, get yourself under control. Oh, let the good time roll.
And that was our little tribute to the legendary Pete Myers. Now, Paulette, there was one song that was used for many years on Happy Station that was used to introduce the mailbag segment. And I don't know if it was Tom or it was somebody else. They took it, they re-edited it down, and they would use it to introduce the letters. You know, speaking of letters, recently I was discussing with someone and I said, you know, have you ever thought like sitting down, taking a pen in your hand, writing a letter to somebody, going to the post office, licking a stamp, putting it on the envelope, putting it in a box, and away it goes. And they said to me, why would I do that?
Wow, times have changed, haven't they?
Certainly have. So what is the song, Paulette?
Well, we've got the Silveras from the Netherlands with the Postcard.
Señor, for all the meisjes richten hun blikken naar de diligence. Wie van hen won die knappe postiljon? Die blozend blondje, dat trok hem aan. Hij dorst het wagen, hart om zijn vrouw te vragen. Draag af haar mondje, doen te verstaan dat zij met hem door het leven wilde gaan. En over berg en dal hoorde je overal, leven zo klonk het luid, breng om en breng.
The Cervera's from the Netherlands with the postcards, otherwise known as the postcards, and the beginning of that was used for introducing the mail segment on Radio Netherlands. Happy Station Show, I should say. Okay, you're listening to a special edition of PCJ Radio's Happy Station Show broadcasting to the Americas on 9,955 kilohertz. We are issuing a special QSL card for this program. And if you'd like to get it, this is what you have to do. You have to write us by snail mail, okay? So don't be lazy and just shoot off an email. I'm not going to respond. You have to do it the old-fashioned way. And it's very easy to do. You hold your pen, you know, in your fingers, and you physically write the address on an envelope. And it's not too expensive anyway. Okay, this is how you send us a letter if you wish to receive our QSL card. It's very easy. PCJ Radio. Attention, Happy Station, 8th floor, number 47, lane 31, San Min Road. And I'll spell that for you. That's S-A-N, like Norman, M, like mother, I-N, Road, San Min Road, Section 1, New Taipei City. The zip code is 22070, Taiwan, R-O-C. And I will give it out again towards the end of the program so you can get in touch with us. Now, Paulette, we're honored to have somebody with us today. Somebody who is very well known in international broadcasting circles. And what is his name?
No, I have absolutely no idea who it would be. Who is it, Keith?
Do you think he's a cheesemaker?
Do I? We're talking broadcasters. Where? Why are we talking cheese?
Do you think he's a chocolate maker?
Chocolate cheese. Okay, we're doing a
chocolate
show.
Chocolate cheese. Ooh, that's yummy.
Chocolate, comma, cheese. Okay, I know you're bad with punctuation, so. Okay, so we're talking chocolate, we're talking cheese, and we are doing Radio Netherlands. So those two things relate. Am I close?
Let me give you another clue. Do you think he's a famous world skier?
World skier. Okay. Are we talking, we're going a little bit east of Holland then, to the Alps?
Well, to Switzerland, yes.
Ah, okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So are you going to reveal the mysterious broadcaster to me?
I am going to reveal him to you and everyone else. But first, take a listen to this. Paulette, But, you know, we have somebody on the line right now that, well, you've heard about him. You've heard about him, but you've actually never formally met. So let me be very formal right now. Mrs. McQuarrie, I'd like you to meet Sir Bob Zanotti all the way in Switzerland. Bob Zanotti, Sir Bob Zanotti, I introduce you to Dame Paulette McQuarrie.
How are you?
Pleased to meet you. Mutual, I'm sure.
This is a first indeed. It's quite exciting because, you know, we know each other from Facebook and from Keith and, you know, from the broadcasting business, but, you know, we've never really talked, so it's a great pleasure for me.
And likewise for me too, Bob.
Okay, you know, we have a few things to get to. We only have like 15, 17 minutes to put in as much as possible. As you know, a lot of things are happening in international broadcasting this month. One station is disappeared. They vanished from the airwaves on June 24th, and that, of course, is Radio Canada International. And then today, June 29th, in UTC time, which, by the way, is Thursday for you listening right now in North America, Radio Netherlands is doing their final broadcast. Now, I know, Bob, that you never were a big listener of Radio Netherlands, and the same with you, Paulette. But we don't want to talk so much about that, but mainly about how stations have lost their identity. Now, Paulette, you heard some clips of Radio Netherlands that I sent you, and Bob, you heard some stuff from Pete Myers that I sent you. First, Bob, with you, because you worked at Swiss Radio International, so you probably know what a lot of the people at Radio Netherlands are going through right now at this very moment. You know, there was a time when Swiss Radio International had a very identifiable sound. Switzerland had a very identifiable image, you know, Swiss cheese, chocolate, you know. And then all of a sudden, somebody came in and decided to change everything, and that identity was lost. And the same thing happened with Radio Netherlands. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I would just simply call it the entry of the technocrats as opposed to the broadcasters and people who had a feeling for the audience and just a good old common sense of what the audience was looking for. Incidentally, Keith, also not one of the heavyweights of international broadcasting, but I would add Vatican Radio to the stations going QRT in ham radio parlance. At the end of June, they're ending shortwave broadcasts to Europe and the Americas. The technocrats, that's what happened. You know, during the Cold War, and I think this is really what we're talking about here, there was a very idealistic sense among the mainstream, the important, the top five, the top ten broadcasters in the world. They knew what they were doing. They had motivation. They had purpose. Swiss Radio International knew what it was doing to tell people about Swiss life, to make it clear that Switzerland was a neutral and objective country in the midst of the Cold War, was not part of the polarity, East and West. Radio Netherlands, I think, was very similar, even though RN was, the country was part of NATO and very definitely politically in the West. But it was, you know, the Dutch were trying to show who they were. The Swiss were trying to show who they were. And this got lost, frankly, in 1989 when the Berlin Wall came down. And suddenly stations lost their raison d'être, you know, mm-hmm. their purpose for being. They didn't know, well, what are we doing? What are we going to do now, folks? And nobody was clearly informed about or had a strategy. And this was the beginning of the downfall. And then the technocrats came in and they said, you know, the bean counters, as you've often called them, what are we going to do now? Is this worth it? Is it cost effective? And then we get to that other ugly thing, which we can't avoid and we can't ignore and we shouldn't ignore. And that is the DXer syndrome.
You know, Bob, Paulette, I think I've told you about the DXs before because there is a certain type of DX where I think I told you about them before, right?
Yes. They're unique.
Or As Bob Tillman used to say, you know, my partner in the shortwave merry-go-round, man spoke, woman spoke, hear you clearly, my receivers, my antenna is that, please send QSL, that's the end of it. This is not going to impress the money givers and sponsors of these services very positively. And I really am quite clear about this. I think that the DXer syndrome, the hardcore DXer syndrome, contributed largely to the downfall of the great shortwave stations. They didn't care during the Cold War. They were happy. They could show their sponsors and the people who gave them the money. They could show that we have so many listeners out there. They don't write. Maybe they don't speak English, but they're hearing us, or whatever language. They're hearing us, and that kept them going. Everybody was happy. But that didn't work when the Berlin Wall came down in 1989. Mm-hmm. And I think there we pick up the story.
Paulette, you know, you heard some of the stuff that, you know, we're using today from Radio Netherlands. What was your impression of that material? Because, you know, the one thing that, you know, I think Bob would agree with this. I remember a time, you know, Radio Netherlands, just like Swiss Radio International, had a very strong identity. Okay, they were not, let's say, a station that people would tune to for news, but they had their own identity. They had something that was very special. And then they decided, well, we're going to get rid of anything that was that made us popular and switch only to news. And you heard sort of like the golden era of Radio Netherlands until the early 1990s. What did you think of that stuff?
Well, it was highly entertaining. And yes, I think there is too much of a trend, and not just in shortwave, but I think just in the whole industry itself, or what Bob was referring to is, you know, the bean counters have come in, and there's such a push on what the ad companies say is the, you know, the money follows the eyeballs. And that seems to be where everybody is rushing now to. Let's see where everybody is, and then let's go there and set up our tent and entertain them. Instead, before, in those days, people that had a program or had a station, they did the entertainment. They came from the heart. And that, I think, is what attracts audiences. But now everybody's chasing the crowds and saying, oh, look at me, and give me your money. And there's also an element of political correctness mixed in there. And, oh, we can't be ourselves. We can't be in your face about who we are. But that, to me, is exactly what made the radio, in the golden days, that was what made radio so special, so wonderful, and so entertaining. And that's lost, I think. That was my impression.
Paulette, if I could just follow up on what you said. You made an extremely important point right now, and I agree with you completely. I remember years ago people talking about listening to shortwave radio, and they said it was armchair travel. They sat at home, and they could hear people, the sounds, the cultures that they might never see. And there was this euphoria after the Second World War, and during the Cold War, people traveled. They were interested in other cultures. And there was, you know, to borrow from the German, there was an element of kitsch. But I have no problem with kitsch. Kitsch is simply an expression for something which is popular, popular culture. Andy Warhol is a great kitsch artist. And I think shortwave radio was largely based on kitsch or stereotypes, but there's nothing. I have no problem with that. You talked before, Keith, about cowbells, chocolate, cheese, and I think of Radio Netherlands, and I think of wooden shoes and windmills and barrel organs. But this was all true. This was not fictitious. It wasn't Disneyland. That culture at that time, that culture existed.
But the thing is, Bob. But, you know, the thing is, Bob, that culture still exists today, but there seems to be sort of like this embarrassment to talk about it, which is, I don't know, but for me that just seems a little odd, because this is what you're known for. You should be really glorifying this.
Bravissimo, tu ha fatto il punto. this Latin energy coming out. Yes, exactly. You have just made the point, which I was trying to make, and you came out and said it. Paulette was saying it. You're saying it. I'm saying it. And I think the three of us have converged on the issue. The innocence. In fact, while we were talking here, I wrote just a couple of notes. Innocence, the image, armchair travel. And this is what we're really talking about. And these technocrats came in, these cynics, these hard-nosed, I almost used a term starting with B, and oh, who wants to hear this? You know, as the Germans say, heile Welt, the ideal idyllic world. What is wrong with that? People had fun. They enjoyed it. People really, through shortwave, presenting these picture postcard scenes of the country acoustically through shortwave, they were doing tremendous service to the image of the countries, whether it be Switzerland or Sweden or the Netherlands. And all of this fell down when the cynics moved in after 1989. Now, this sounds very simplistic, but you know, sometimes nature is based on simplicity. We don't need to complicate the issue by long, deep, pondering thoughts. It is simple as that.
Well, you know,
the technocrats moved in and they destroyed the idealism, the innocence that people enjoyed and kept shortwave going for so many years.
You know, the other day I was thinking about something that happened in, it was either 2006 or 2007. I'm not going to mention the station. But there was a radio station that I applied for, and they got back to me, and I had never heard anything so funny in my life for turning me away. They said, Keith, you know, we like the stuff that you gave, but we think you have too strong a personality. And I thought, I should take that as a compliment, you know?
Definitely. But isn't that interesting? I was just reading something written, I think it was Radio Inc. Magazine, about the industry in North America and the States in particular. And there was a sports talk radio station in New York. It had previously been a country station. It was like ranked 20th, which is good, I guess, for country in New York. But somebody had this great idea to turn it into a sports talk, but not sports at that, prior to that time, sports had been considered just kind of news, you know, the news, weather and sports, remember back in those days. And this idea was, no, this is about, people are passionate about sports. It's a big industry in the States. It's great entertainment. So people talk about it around water coolers, at picnics and barbecues and in the bars and whatnot. So why don't we do a radio program about that and have some interactivity? But what you have to do, first of all, is have personalities. And they hired, as their personality was Don Imus, who is, you know, not really a sports person, but has has an affinity for sports and is interested in it and could express himself and draw listeners in. Interestingly, that station lost $4 million in its first year, but it went on to create a new genre of sports talk radio.
That was the old WNBC 660 in New York.
When I've talked to people in other stations, there are a few exceptions. I mean, if you listen to, say, Radio Australia, the on-air presenters at Radio Australia certainly have very strong on-air personalities. But in North America and Europe, when I listen, let's say, to the VOA has lost a lot of very strong on-air personalities. I think there's only a couple left. Deutsche Welle doesn't have any more. The BBC World Service still has a few. Radio France International has lost many of them. It's almost like they don't want to have, as Tom put it to me, you know, on-air international celebrities. They just want to have people to come in, read stuff, and not become popular.
This is a very critical point, extremely important, that you're raising. And I see the logic or illogic of it. I can understand how it comes together. It's very simple. Because we're talking about generations of broadcasters. When we look at the golden age of shortwave broadcasting, we're talking about an extension, an international extension of the national broadcasting cultures of the respective countries. You just don't find anybody being themselves anymore because that culture has died.
But
and
you know,
short
you know,
is dying with it.
But you know, Bob, there's something you know that I was taught by many people, especially Tom Meyer. He said the best thing that you can do is go on air and be yourself. And you know, I when I was in the U.S. In March, and even listeners that I meet, they always say to me, they say, you're the same in person as you are in the air. I said, well, what do you want me to be? I'm not two people, you know. I'm one person.
I have been preaching this gospel for years. There's only one person you can ever be in this life, and that is yourself. And being yourself, if being yourself appeals to the audience, you are bound to be a success. People will love you. They can feel the sincerity, the energy, the warmth coming out of the loudspeaker. And we don't have so many people like that anymore because that's almost a dead culture.
Well, I agree with that. And Keith, I have to say that since I've started working with you with PCJ Radio, you have been really encouraging me to do that. And I didn't realize until this very moment with you and Bob, when you made your comments, that I had been drifting down that, trying to emulate the way radio is done now in Canada, and forgetting about my trying to sort of create this on-air persona. And Keith says, no, be yourself. And I find the more that I do that, the more fun I have. And that's one thing I've noticed in doing radio since, you know, when I started in 1990, is that when you have fun, your listeners have fun, and then your audience grows. And Keith, thank you for that. And yeah, Bob, you're absolutely right. Personality is so important. And if I can just make one other statement, is I've been following the business development with the internet and all these, you know, technocrats is the word that you like to use, Bob, but with social media and everything and all these business gurus who are jumping on board, that's how a lot of money is being made now. And the big thing now is storytelling is so important, and everybody is teaching everyone in business how to be a good storyteller to convey your brand and get your brand message across. And this is ironic, don't you think? Because the whole in radio and all the media, we have platforms for storytelling. Everybody loves a story. Little kids, tell me a story. Tell me another story. I don't want to go to bed yet. Tell me a story. And what are they doing to radio? Is they're saying, don't tell stories. Don't be personality. You know, not anybody can tell a story. You have to have a good storyteller to tell a good story. And you got to have a personality. The storyteller always has a personality, right? And this everything's backwards. It's illogical, as you put it, Bob.
And you've touched on it again, and I was personally touched by what you just said, because you're absolutely categorically correct. And you know, I suspect or feel there's an element of jealousy there. Just can't do it. I'm not coming down on the younger generation. God, I got four daughters. I've got six grandchildren. I love younger people, and I'm surrounded by them. But we're talking here about an observation. It's not putting anybody down. It's just an observation. They can't help it. Their cultures never went through this. You use that term storytelling. In fact, my latest letter from Switzerland on switzerlandandsound.com talks about this out here in the country, in the Emmental, how people still talk to each other. They greet each other. They tell each other their problems. And we get back to radio, which is, you know, our love here and what we're really talking about, the intimacy of radio. There's no television program, there's no movie that's ever going to compete with radio. And these are the successful personalities that we're talking about, the intimacy. But there was also a sense of responsibility, which is missing today, because whether we're talking about medicine or broadcasting, it's all, unfortunately, in the same sinking ship of industrialization. Everything is an industry, and you can't industrialize emotion. You can't industrialize good radio. There's one movie which I would recommend to anybody. Get it, see it if you haven't seen it already. The story, Good Night and Good Luck, Edward R. Murrow.
Oh, yes. Excellent movie.
Yeah, CBS. And that really says it all. That sense of responsibility towards the audience, towards people, towards society. Those broadcasters, the Edward R. Murrows and others that we could name, the Walter Cronkites, the greats that we all remember. We don't all, unfortunately, remember them. We remember them. The younger people never heard of them. But these are the people who had that feu sacré, that sacred fire, this feeling of responsibility, obligation to society to make a contribution. And we don't have these people anymore, very few.
Let me add one more word to that list there, Bob, and that is respect. And respect, you mentioned it, the other word that I wanted to talk about that you mentioned was industrialize. I actually don't agree that it's a bad thing, but what's bad is how it's done. And there is no respect for on-air talent and the audience. It is just, again, chasing the eyeballs and then just throwing something out there just for the sake of grabbing some money. And that is really short-sighted, and it is a problem with industry and in business for the last several decades. I went through this very similar process when I worked in the airline industry back in the 1980s. I could see it. I don't know why they couldn't see it. And the company that I went out of business. And I saw it coming, and it was simply because you didn't respect the frontline people who were engaging with an audience of customers at that time. But it's the same thing. It's the public. And we're on the ground level. We know. Listen to us. Take our advice. Don't just sit there in your ivory tower and move paper and pencils around and then decree that this is how it's going to be done when you don't know anything. I'll keep my language clean here.
Absolutely. And a couple of thoughts came to my mind. I agree with you. Definition of industrial, we have to deal with that. I think what you also have just touched on is extremely significant, Paulette, and that is the, what shall we call it, just a working title, the video game syndrome. Mm. People, war by remote control, by drones. Everything is a video game. Everybody is zapped. There's no personality. There's no personal interaction anymore. The boss doesn't know their employees anymore. All these violent actions of hire and fire are taking place from above. And this is what I term industrialization. I understand where you're coming from, and we're talking, slightly from different perspectives. But The problem is, as I see it, with international broadcasting, with shortwave broadcasting, well, not the problem, but let's look at the positive side of it. In the golden years that we're all talking about here, I mean, I knew the director of Swiss Radio International, Joe Kirschow. I met him in the bathroom, in the men's room. We talked.
Well, Bob, on that note, thank you for joining Paulette and I today on this special broadcast to the Americas on an adjacent frequency, not in this part of the band, but another very close frequency. They're also saying farewell, but their program is only 57 minutes and they're repeating it three times. This is a full 2 hours and it's all different.
Well, Keith, it was a great pleasure to talk to you again, as it always is. And Paulette, a very particular pleasure to chat with you here and to make this audio acquaintance for the very first time. And I apologize for being such a big mouth.
A fine romance with no kissing.
I love Keith. I love personalities. That's why I love you both.
Well, guess what, Paulette?
What?
You have any idea?
No.
We're playing this game again, and no, has nothing to do with cheese or chocolate.
Well, you know what? I got to look at the clock, and it's not too dark yet, but I can see the sun's about to set, so I'm guessing our time is just about running out.
Yeah, because we leave you at 4 hours UTC, so we have to say goodbye now. Before we go, once again, if you wish to receive the special QSL card that we're putting out for this broadcast, do contact us. Our address is PCJ Radio, Attention Happy Station, 8th floor, that's 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Sanmin Road, Section 1, New Taipei City. The zip code is 22070, and then put Taiwan ROC. Once again, PCJ Radio, attention Happy Station, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Sanmin Road, Section 1, New Taipei City, 22070, ROC Taiwan or Taiwan ROC. It doesn't really matter. You would just put it up that way. Anyway, if you want to also check out this program again, or past programs, not just of Happy Station, but of the show that you do. What is it called again? Ukrainian Smorgasbord or something?
Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, that one.
That one, that's right. Where can they go?
www.nashholos.com, or you can send an email to producer@nashholos.com, and that's N like November, A-S-H-H-O-L-O-S.com.
Well, that's it, and that's all we have time for on this program. Paulette, I'm going to leave you the honors to introduce our farewell piece of music, because today, well, this is sort of a, some people would say sad, because today is the final broadcast of Radio Netherlands in English on shortwave. But we don't want to remain sad. We want to remain happy. So our final piece of music today is
Happy Music by James Last.
So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron.
And I'm Paulette McQuarrie.
We'll see you soon. Bye-bye, everyone.